You're locked into Leveling the Field, a women's sports podcast run by women for women. I'm your host, Amia Kay, representing the one and only 850, and the starting lineup is in the building. Talk to them, ladies.
What's good in the hood? I am Milani J, and we're here to level that field again and again and again.
And hey, y'all, it's Rena Simone from Houston, Texas. Let's talk about some sports, y'all.
Exactly. So we about to get locked and loaded. You heard it here. That's the starting lineup. Now, before we get into today's show, we want to address a developing story involving WNBA star Rekia Jackson and her ex-boyfriend, Atlanta Falcons rookie James Pierce Jr. So if you're just hearing about this, reports state that Jackson was stalked and involved in a violent vehicle incident with her ex-boyfriend. Jackson reported that she noticed Pierce following her car while driving on a Saturday morning when Jackson's car stopped at a red light. He then attempted to open her car door. Jackson accelerated and started driving towards the Doral Police Department, and she claimed that when she was near the police station, where Pierce intentionally collided into the rear of her vehicle with his SUV. As Jackson got closer to the police station, Pierce cut her off, and then in her attempts to escape, he hit her car head-on. Pierce was arrested and charged with multiple felonies, including aggravated battery with a deadly weapon and aggravated stalking. Since then, he's posted bond and been released, and the legal process is ongoing. But here's what hit differently. Rekia withdrew from the 2026 Unrivaled one-on-one tournament. So that's her career, her mental health, her sense of safety, all of that's being impacted. And the court findings show she's prepared to testify if this case moves forward. So this isn't just sports news. This is about protection, accountability, and what happens when a woman in sports must fight off of the court. So here's our hot button. Considering that Rekia Jackson is a public figure and this is a sensitive incident, how can publicizing this bring awareness to domestic violence?
I'm not glad it happened to her, but I'm glad like the way that they're putting it out, because athletes do this as well, and it's bringing recognition, because not gonna lie, I feel like he threw his life away. I know he got 5 years, but that's just, when it comes to these franchises, they just don't play like that, and I don't see him getting back in the league, and I know he's only been in for a year. So, and I just pray for her mental health, her safety, because I feel like something like that happening, especially so close to the police station, like, you're going to be watching your every move. And it's going to be hard to trust, like, men further down the line, especially because, like, I know they went to college together and, like, they built that relationship. As well as, like, I know she probably seen signs before, so she's probably like, when did everything change? And, you know, did I miss something? And just, like, you know, overthink.
I ain't going to lie. Domestic violence is, like, it's everywhere. And I hate to say it that way, but it is.
In different formats, too.
Literally a lot of different formats. So it's just, like, we can always say, oh, well, this is going to put it to the forefront. But the problem is, it's not that nobody knows about it, because it's widely known. It's the two problems. One, unfortunately, we do have women who see this and still continue to stay. And the other problem is the situation and how it's being dealt with isn't taken serious. There are no real consequences. So it's just like, we already know domestic violence is a thing. It's just, how are we going to handle it, and how are we going to put us into it? And it really won't ever end, but how are we just going to find some type of common ground for it?
I like that answer. And I think that kind of alludes to how the media portrays it. I feel like ultimately it's a big deal. Of course, it's headline news, so they're going to attack that. But after that, it seems like almost as if the news kind of vanishes eventually. And what I mean by that is, like, if you look at the, what's his name? Kevin Porter Jr. situation and Miles Bridges situation, they had similar situations. And I know that we're talking NBA, but it still resonates when it comes down to domestic violence against women. And for people who might be listening and don't know about these situations, just to give you a little backdrop, Kevin Porter Jr. got into an altercation with his then WNBA girlfriend, and it turned violent. He pretty much assaulted her, and he's back in the league today. Same thing happened with Miles Bridges. So my question is, are leagues doing enough? Because it seems like they're giving these guys their punishment, and then they end up right back into the league.
They're not.
I wonder if there's a difference in the NFL and NBA, because I know, like, a lot in the NBA, they do let them back, but I have to do more research when it comes to the NFL, because I know, like, their protocols are way stricter than it is in the NBA. So that would be very interesting to see, like, you know, if he really serves all his time, which I doubt he will.
These are celebrities with money.
Yeah. Like, are they going to let him back in the NFL? Because, like I said, the NFL is way stricter. And then, not gonna lie, the NBA is corrupt. Yeah. But that's a topic for another
day. But then that leads into the question of, like, what message does it send when high-profile male athletes are accused of violence against women? And why are leagues responding as if it's something petty? Because in my opinion, if domestic violence is that big of a deal and we say that that's not a good thing, why are we putting these high-profile athletes and celebrities back into the limelight? It's almost saying it's okay, and as long as you apologize or you pay small reparations, you are welcome back in.
Yeah, I mean, and not to take the focus off the topic at hand, but let's look at the Epstein files for a quick second. More money, the more you get away with. So it's just like, I don't know what it's going to take. That's such a big question. I don't know what it's going to take. But all I know is that something needs to be done. And just because you have more than a few thousand or $100,000, it doesn't make it okay.
So with us being like upcoming journalists and PR professionals, how would you handle a situation like that? Because we're supposed to be representatives of the community and making sure that we're putting out factual news, not being opinionated. But when it's a topic that's this sensitive, where do you feel like we are supposed to draw the line when it comes down to allowing people back into leagues and allowing them back into good graces with, you know, like, I don't know how I'm really trying to word it, but you get what I'm saying? Like,
I'm just trying to think about it.
I'll go first just because I'm not a PR major, but I'm in business. And I remember when they caught that CEO and like the vice president, and he was cheating on his wife, and the CEO had spoke about it and like how they fired it. And it's just like, I feel like it starts in the company. And I feel like a lot of people didn't understand why she did that. But like, since I'm a business major, you have to weed out all that. So it's like, if you're cheating in your home, you're going to cheat on your job. So I kind of have like that business mindset when it comes to it. We just have to like remove all that, because it's like, if you're doing that in your day-to-day life, this is your job. This is not something as important to you as you think it would be. So it's just like, it really starts in the home, for real, for real.
Yeah. It just seems like the media is really quiet when guys or girls come back into the league after something this detrimental happens to a person that they care about. It's almost like, well, that's not breaking news. Yeah, they're back, but yeah. It's no report on it.
They just fine people. Like, yeah. The NBA, I don't think we see as many fines in the NFL as we do in the NBA. They just fine it, and they're just like, oh, they had to pay this much money. But it's just like, I remember LeBron had to pay like a fine because he missed so many preseason games. It's just like, you're just... they're money hungry.
Yeah,
it's just a business to them.
It's kind of sick.
And that's another thing. It's just a business to them. When you talk about like the PR aspect and how they handle things, when we have these business and like lawmakers in these positions, they don't really care about the image. They pay people for that, so they're trying to get the best way out. But at the end of their goal, I mean, the end of the day, their goal is to make money.
Well, you know, it's just a little hand. Moving into the unrivaled one-on-one tournament, Chelsea Gray took home the title and the $300,000 prize. In a format where it is just you, your skill, and your composure, she really controlled the pace and showed why she's a vet. But I'm curious, was that who y'all expected to win?
Yeah, she was in my top five. And like the description said, she's a vet. So you can't just let like certain people come in and think like, you know, you're going to win. Like, I feel like all of them definitely put up a good fight. But I definitely had her, or I don't know if Stewie was in it, winning for sure. So, and I love Chelsea Gray. She's just aggressive and she just controls like whether it's like herself or her team, she's just a great like basketball player. So
yeah, I agree. I was not surprised for her to win at all, just because she is a champion, she is a vet, and we see what she does when she's on a championship team. I feel like this just showed her individual skills, which I was very proud to see and happy for her. So that way she's making a name for herself via social media.
True.
Yeah. So I was very happy for her, but I can't say I wasn't expecting her to win, but I was rooting for Paige, I'm not going to lie.
I like how you worded that when you were talking about just her being able to show her individual skills. Like, I think the difference between men and women's basketball, like, they play together. It's a team sport when it comes to women. So I think she definitely showcased that, and just not someone being a part of the Aces and just, like, you know, getting shots up for Asia Wilson or just giving passes for her. So
yeah, and that's why I like the one-on-one tournament, just because it gave people the opportunity to see these players display their God-given talent, their skills, what they've been working on individually. Like, I know a lot of people were kind of clowning her for the shimmy, but I don't know how many people can actually do that in the middle of a game, like actually be conscious enough to say, I'm gonna do a shimmy. It might look crazy, it might not fake the defender, but just to have the skills and the mindset to put in a move like that was just like spectacular to see in its own.
Yeah, I love that we are seeing women get the recognition they deserve, because it's been long awaited, so long. And I remember, like, growing up, like, it was always the topic of at hand was, well, men basketball, what about women? Come on, man, give us something. Like,
and even the prize money, too. I don't even think when they win, like, the Commissioner's Cup for women's basketball, it's I don't think it's even close to how much money she made. And I know it's not about that, but it just shows the impact that Unrivaled is, like, having on everybody.
Yeah.
And we talked about that on the last episode, like, how packed out it is, and, like, the arenas they're at, so.
Yeah.
Facts.
Well, now with Angel Reese officially back in the Unrivaled mix, the 3-on-3 side gets even more interesting. So does Angel Reese return automatically make her a team contender in a 3-to-3, or does chemistry matter more in this format? I say chemistry.
I don't know.
I like Angel Reese, but I don't feel like her singly impacting the game is going to be what will get the roses over the top.
She's a team player for sure. She's a role player. One thing about Angel, I don't think chemistry matters in 3-on-3.
Yeah.
I remember when I watched the U.S. Olympics, I think it was Haley Van Lift and two other players. They were just trying to get the shots up. And, like, you know, when you have your 3-on-3, you know everybody's roles. So you're just trying to get open and make sure, you know, you have that 1-on-1, but you're still, like, passing the ball. So I don't think really chemistry matters.
I say chemistry just because I feel like looking at basketball as a sport, but also playing a sport, you got to know your player. Your teammate. With that being said, it's like you at least gotta be available for your teammate. Facts. Just to make the game, you know, keep going, have some motivation towards it. Because I feel like, I mean, to take it out of context, but when you're at a workplace where, you know, your coworkers, y'all just like, now what's up? And that's it. It's kind of like, okay, I don't have any motivation to, you know, do my best. Versus when you on that field or when you, you know, on the floor with your teammates, it's like, let's go. You know, it's more of a upbeat type of situation.
But I feel like one thing I've seen in Unrivaled, when, like, even with the 1-on-1, like, they're excited to learn but also to compete. And even with the 3-on-3, like, I understand the chemistry aspect, but I feel like everybody respects everybody's game so much. They understand what everybody brings to the table as well as themselves. And I feel like that's really important, not even in basketball, in life, like understanding what you bring to the table. That's like that's why I love 3-on-3, because it's like they know their role, they know what they can do, and I know what I could do. And I feel like that's why it formulates so well. So maybe I didn't mean to say that chemistry doesn't matter, but I've definitely seen in this league like how they celebrate each other and they uplift everybody, and I just love that. So I'm excited for the 3-on-3.
Well, now that I'm looking at the roster, I don't know, I might have to take that back, because she does have Chelsea Gray and Kalia Cooper on her team. So if all three of them are like playing on the floor at the same time, that is going to be a tough little team to beat.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, I also like the miss, though.
Those are some powerhouses.
Yeah.
On what?
And then remember, they were underdogs last year, the Roses, and they got the chips. So.
Look, I can't play basketball, so I'm not going against y'all. I promise. You ain't got to worry about me.
<That's gonna be
laughs> You don't got to worry about me.
And like I said, Angel Reese, like, just having like those two dominant people, like I said, when she plays her role, like, they're, and that's another thing. Angel Reese isn't selfish. Like, she knows, like, when to get open, when to pass the ball and stuff like that. Like I said, she's just a hustler. She's one of, like, my favorite players just on and off the court. So having, like, people like Chelsea Gray and Kalia Cooper, like, they're definitely going to make, like, some shifty moves, and I'm definitely going to tune in.
Well, if you're building a three-on-three team from scratch, what type of players are you picking first? A shooter, a rebounder, or someone who can lock up people defensively?
Point guard. I definitely say point guard, shooting guard, and then a post. Only because, like, I mean, with 3-on-3, you're not going up and down the court, so defense really doesn't matter. It does, like, you know, 1-on-1, but you're not, like, it's not repetitive, but you're just, like, going beyond the three-point line. So as long as, like, I feel like all three of those people are defenders and they can keep their people, and you should be playing man as well, then it should be fine, I don't think. Like, and I feel like everybody should be playing defense. So when I first look at somebody, I need, like, I think Chelsea Gray, and rebounder, Angel Reese, and was it Kalia Cooper?
Yeah.
Good mid-range. I feel like that's, like, a good team for real.
I feel like my starting lineup, I'm first going to go get a bucket getter. Like, whoever's dropping 30 a night, whoever has a name for themselves in the league, that's who I'm getting. Because when it's time to win, I need somebody who can close out games. So I'm going for somebody like a Paige Beckers, or I'm going for, like, I'm going for somebody like Arike.
Yeah, I
understand. I'm going to get me a bucket getter for sure. And then after that, I definitely want me a stretch forward, somebody who can run the floor and not get tired on the matchup switches. Because with 3-on-3, you definitely have... You just have more space to work with. So I don't need anybody getting stuck on the back screen or anybody who can't come over on top and pick up the guard up top. So I'm going for like a stretch forward for sure, like a Stewie or an Aaliyah Boston. And then the last person, like you said, that mid-range game, I feel like that's definitely disappearing, not in the WNBA, but in the NBA in general, is definitely disappearing. And that's a lot of space, like I said. So you want to definitely utilize that space. So anybody who can knock down a mid-range, but that's what I'm pretty much going with.
Well, even with these powerhouses, is a 3-on-3 harder than a 5-on-5 because there's nowhere to hide?
Absolutely.
You think a 3-on-3 is harder than a 5-on-5?
Yeah, just because, like, just in my, well, I'm not even going to say my personal experience, but, well, yeah, I will say my personal experience. I feel like that's where I learned how to really handle the ball, especially being somebody who was a center and power forward growing up. Because, you know, back in the day, they just pretty much picked your position based on your height. So I was always like the taller one in my city league team. So I started down there, but of course, the higher up you go on the levels, the more you need those basketball skills. So I spent a lot of time just playing a lot of pickup basketball at the local gym with guys. And if we didn't have enough for five, we would run fours or we would run threes or twos. And most of the time it was usually threes or twos. And I feel like that's when you have no choice but to learn how to handle the basketball. You cannot hide anywhere because if your matchup is against somebody who really does have good defense, every time you catch the ball, you're getting exposed, and you don't want your teammates to feel like you're the weakest link and that they can't pass you the ball. Then it becomes a 3-on-2 type situation or a 1-on-2 type situation. So I definitely say 3-on-3 is harder than 5-on-5 because 5-on-5, I mean, really the fourth and fifth man can just set screens for the shooters and for people who can score. Like, they don't really have to score. They can rebound, they can box out, they have other things that they can do. But with a 3-on-3, you need scores.
Yeah, I feel like it depends on the aspect when it comes to, like, when it comes to getting people exposed, 3-on-3 for sure is harder. But for 5-on-5, I feel like you said, like, those lazy players that sit around, I don't know. I feel like 5-on-5 is kind of easier to hold people accountable. Well, harder to hold people accountable, too, because, like you said, some people are just setting screens. They aren't doing a lot. So, I don't know. I like this question. Because I just see it in, like, different aspects. When you were talking about just the exposing and stuff like that. But a lot of people didn't come up playing 3-on-3. Like, I don't think I did, for real. I would just, like, we would just, like, pick up. It was always enough people. So if I were in that thing, I definitely had to, like, develop my ball handling skills later down the road. So I feel like it just depends on what setting you're in. But I'm starting to like 3-on-3 way more than 5-on-5.
So. Oh, yeah.
And that's another thing. I feel like in the league, you know, when we see those players that have been playing 5-on-5, when they come to 3-on-3, it's kind of more entertaining, too, because, like I said, they know what they bring to the table, vice versa. So
they get to flex them skills.
Exactly. All right, y'all, so let's move into FAMU Women's College Basketball. We've talked about the pro stars. Now let's talk about our stars. As we are near the end of the regular season, the question isn't about individual matchups anymore. It's about how the team wants to finish. FAMU is sitting in the lower middle end of the SWAC standings at 6-8 in the conference play, and every remaining games becomes about momentum, speed, and confidence heading into the postseason. Tonight's matchup against Alabama State, who is sitting in 9-4 in the conference play, ends right near to the top of the standings. This makes a statement of opportunity for FAMU. If you're trying to climb into the SWAC standings through those games, you must compete. Is the focus now climbing in the standings or building momentum for the SWAC championship?
Oh, please, let me get on to this. Hold on. Y'all, look, I love us. I do. I promise I do. But we need to build and keep, okay? Build and keep. Because at the same time, we have it. Like, we have the skills. It's there. We're getting the skills. They're getting there. But what we really need to focus on is keeping it, what's the word? Consistent. We need to keep it consistent. I feel like a lot of times we get on our winning streak and our girls and guys, but our girls, they get kind of lax. They like, oh, we got this. And then the other team come harder because they're still trying to climb. So I feel like it's kind of climbing, standing, building, and keeping. Because once you get there, you got to be able to hold that. And I don't know. I try to have faith for our girls, but at the same time, you know, things getting a little shaky right now. So,
and I definitely understand that. I like the way the question was worded, but as well as I feel like some people kind of look towards to the SWAC tournament. It's like, we got to start now.
Yeah.
A lot of players, like, it starts in practice, for real, for real. You don't think you're finna come out to the tournament and just, like, blow all these people.
That's like
out
me
the water.
Going out there. Ain't never played basketball. Oh, yeah, I'm finna do it.
Yeah, you finna hit 10 threes. Like, no, it starts in practice. And it's really with every game, too. So, hopefully, like, you know, regardless of the outcome of this game, they learn from their mistakes and they see what they can do differently. Because that's what it's all about, for real, for real. You have to hold yourself accountable, watch film, and really know yourself. Because if you're not realistic with yourself, you're doomed to fail. And this goes into our next question. So is the goal right now to secure a tournament spot, or should we focus climbing higher to avoid first round matchups with the top seed? If FAMU finishes eighth, they will likely face number one seed. Is that a realistic upset opportunity, or does this seed matter too much in the SWAC?
Okay, so they just played a number one seed the other night, and I was not impressed by Alabama A&M at all.
Mm-mm.
They literally gave the ball to Kalia Walker and she scored 24. And what frustrates me about that the most is, how do you let a guard that is the same height as Purifoy get downhill every single time? Bro, I was so pissed because we have girls down there, but when I watch the film and I watch them in person and all of that, I see cones. We are not playing defense. Like, I understand that coach feels like her team is a good defensive team, and they are when they are feeling confident. Like, when they started the game, we were right there with them defensively. So I don't know if it's a conditioning issue. I don't know if it is lack of confidence issue, if it is a mental problem, just as far as, like, not feeling like they're going to continue in the game in a positive way, so they just shut down. I don't know what the problem is, but they were right there with them, and then in the second quarter they let a 23-5 run go, and they always do this in one of the quarters, and they have to play catch up for the rest of the game.
And I feel like that's discouraging, like you said, it might be a mental thing.
So now I'm wondering, do you all have a team identity? Because every game, there's one person who's scoring all of the points, and then everybody else has 3, 4, 5, 0, 0, 0, 0.
Like, one person in double digits.
It was Purifoy. It was literally the battle of the point guards.
This past game?
Yes, it was the battle of the point guards. Taniya Purifoy had 11 points. Everybody else showed up with 4, 8, 5, 7, 2. Nobody else scored at all.
You know what I think it is? Because there's no communication. Like, I've been to several games. These girls do not communicate. It's definitely a confidence thing, because we was even looking at Deuce like, hey, well, you know, formerly known as Shania, but we was looking at her like, hey, you normally be putting up shots. What's happening? And so, really,
she was 0-for-11.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
And we couldn't buy a shot in that game. And that's what terrifies me going into the postseason, because these next few games are going to be against teams that are up there in the SWAC. So my question is, how can we adjust that? How can we fix that going into the game? How do we knock down shots? Like, were the lights just brighter than expected? I don't know. Do we just have too many students in the crowd? Are we getting scared, nervous? Like, I don't know what the problem is. I feel like we're very talented, and I think that's what frustrates me more than anything. We just can't all of the girls cannot get on the same page at the same time. You at least need your starting five to produce. And if we can't get the starting five to produce, like, I think Maya Giles-Jones, she did start, but she's usually their sixth man. She had a great game. She had 8 and 10. Yeah. And then you have your stars with 4 points, 2 points. It's inconsistent. It makes
like
no
sense. It goes with the identity, like, who are y'all? Because if y'all are not showing up in the defensive end, and someone has, like, when I started playing basketball, like, my coaches were really big on defense. I feel like the offense came with that, because it was the hustle. It's the being in shape. And it's really working with your teammates, because, like, playing defense, playing offense, I feel like offense is kind of like the selfish. But when you're playing defense, you're playing for a greater good. You're trying to get a steal. You're trying to get those hustle points. And I feel like you said, when it comes to identity, okay, if y'all can't score and y'all can't play defense, then what are you doing for us?
And that's the thing, Alabama, they were very defensive. Like, them girls was hungry. Like,
you have
it
to
was
be,
getting
though.
Aggressive
and everybody can't put up shots, but, like, some people, like, will literally start. Like, I remember my basketball team, like, I know I always had a starting spot because, like, I might have not been able to dribble the well, I could shoot, but I know I could get the steals. And then that helps people around you too. Like, when you have, like, a defensive team, like, that pushes other teams, because, like, y'all are all hungry. We're getting the steals, you know. I got the steal, she running after it because she know I'm gonna get the steal, pass, boom, quick assist points. It's just, like, things like that. And that's why I love defense. Like, my dad used to tell me defense wins championships.
Yep.
So I like like how you talked about their identity, because I don't think they really do know their identity. If they're not a shooting team, if they're not a defensive team, if y'all can't even talk on the court, y'all need to start from the ground up and figure it out.
And I'm not saying that they're not good defensively. I just don't think that they can hold the defense throughout the entirety of 40 minutes. Because for Alabama A&M not to score a single three-point shot and get 24 points in the paint is insane. Like, there's no other way around it. That just, for me, it's just unsettling, because it's letting me know that you know that this person is the problem, but you can't stop the problem.
Yeah.
So then what?
Going into our last question, so if the season does not end the way they hope, how should the program communicate process to the fan base and recruits? And we kind of touched on this, except for, like, you know, when it comes to the fan base and the recruits. So, you know, two of us have played basketball in here, so, like, if you if you've seen somebody, like, seen a team like this, how would you feel? How would you try to come and change it around, or, you know, coming in, or somebody that, because, you know, a lot of people love Coach Gordon, and I feel like,
she could be better.
I mean, no, I was going to say, how can I word this? Like, it's nothing bad against her, but I feel like if she wasn't here, we wouldn't have no faith at all.
Yeah.
So, and I feel like they're kind of, like, eating off, like, her success.
I don't think the problem is the coach. Coach Gordon is a good coach. Exactly. She's played at the highest level.
And she loves her players, too, because I've been in some of their
practices. And then I also, Coach D was a great pickup this year. She was the men's basketball coach at FAMU DRS. And just having her here, I know what she can do. So I have faith and trust in the coaching staff. I think the problem, personally, is just... It's the girls, unfortunately. Like, you just have some people who should be role players instead of starters, in my opinion. And in order to get good starters, you're going to have to recruit a little bit better. My thoughts, just being a Tallahassee native and growing up here and seeing all of the talent that did not either get drafted, I mean, not drafted, recruited, or did not go to school here on the collegiate level and went outside of Tallahassee, is you need to start looking within the Big Bend, because there are some girls here that can hoop. And what better place to play than home? Like, I just,
man,
I don't,
everybody loves a story,
everybody
like
loves a story like that. And I feel like that is a big thing, especially for smaller market teams. Like, we're the SWAC, we don't have a lot of NIL money. Some girls just want the opportunity to be able to play at the next level. So why not get somebody from home who might not be that top star and leave to a bigger school for NIL, but can give you 3 or 4 good years here and start building at home?
Yeah, building the program up too, because people see that.
Exactly. And that will bring more fans, because if their family is from here and their friends are from here, they're going to come see them play.
Yeah.
And it's going to generate a storyline for
middle schoolers,
local. Yeah. It's going to impact the city very, very well. So I feel like that's something that should be considered, especially going into next year. Keep the girls that are producing and, of course, put up the numbers, and then try to start filling in those gaps with people who are a little bit closer to home. Like, I love the fact that Coach brought Deuce back to Florida. She was at a JUCO in California. She wanted to be closer to home, and she chose FAMU. I feel like she's a great pickup. But now I feel like when you're in the middle of the SWAC, you have to start thinking, who can I build around my good players? Who can I build around Purifoy? Who can I build around Deuce? Who can I build around Breasia Robinson? And actually get it done.
Well, you know, talking about recruiting from home, I think you need to go ahead and get back on that court. Go ahead and shoot.
No,
go ahead.
Ma'am.
Look, y'all,
if I had the opportunity,
them days is over.
What?
But
if I had the opportunity, I would get in shape so fast. Because that's another thing.
Yeah.
I like how you talk.
So what's stopping you now?
I don't know. I don't know how the eligibility works. Not gonna lie, because I've already been in college for 4 years, but I never used it. So I'm like, but you know, it's.
I know. I still got 2 more years of eligibility.
Come on, well, but get I'm not.
No, but listen. It's not about me. It's about them at this point.
We're over and done with that.
I like how you touched on just, like, you know, building the program up. One thing, I think another thing is, like, I feel like you said, they give up. And I feel like, you know, if we've seen them trying in some of the games and they're giving it their best, and sometimes teams are just better than them, okay, we understand. But it's like, I feel like that disconnect is like, we're not seeing nothing from y'all. So why are we coming to the games? And I feel like that, even like you said, picking from the local, we seen that with FAMU football.
Yeah.
When they won the Celebration Bowl, that was huge for FAMU. Mm-hmm. Like, huge for FAMU. And I mean, FAMU's always been like a prominent school, and, you know, the fans have always came out to the city from like the local and everything, but like just seeing that story and just like the decline of that too, I wouldn't want to see the opposite. Like, I want it to come up. So I feel like these last few games, they really just need to give it their all and understand their role too. Like you said, I don't think they know their role.
Yeah.
Too, and some people just want to shoot and they want to do this and they don't understand, like, you know, everybody has a role.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff like that. And I think they just really need to figure that out. And like I said, it starts on the defensive end for real. Because like when you're hungry, and that's another thing, defense, you can't be selfish. Defense definitely taught me a lot when it came to basketball, just life. Like, you can't be selfish, just for the greater good. Like I said, getting those steals, getting those fast breaks, like giving it up when you know you don't have what you sold the ball. It's just defense wins championships. So,
yeah, these last few games will definitely say a lot about who this team is under pressure and how the finish will help shape the tone heading into the offseason and beyond. But we're going to head to the diamond. FAMU softball is officially underway. The Lady Rattlers open the season at home against Marshall in a competitive matchup, jumping out to an early lead before the game tightened late. But even in the loss, the fight and discipline were clear. And then they went to Atlanta to the HBCU Invitational. And when I say FAMU represented, they represented. They responded they responded with authority, stacking wins against Bowie State, Coppin State, Hampton, and North Carolina Central, which stretched and showed resilience and depth early in the season. And I'm not going to lie, this roster came into the year with high expectations. Individually, the Lady Rattlers are turning heads across the SWAC. Four of our softball players were named to the preseason All-SWAC team. So congratulations to All-SWAC first team, Zariah Hughes, pitcher, All-SWAC second team, Sierra Maple, outfielder, All-SWAC second team, Samantha Smith, pitcher, All-SWAC second team, Jameson Townsend, DP. So in softball, a designated player is basically listed in the lineup as an offensive player, but can enter the field defensively at any time, especially if the lineup adjustments happen during the game. Just a little background on what that is. And then all SWAT second team, Amari Brown, pitcher. And then also, additionally, Amari Brown has been named SWAT preseason pitcher of the year, highlighting her as a key player to watch this season. And speaking of awards, I also want to note that breaking FAMU school track record, freshman Janari Kitchen is number one in the SWAC after 60-meter finals at the Windy City Invitational.
Hey, girl.
Also, Shania.
Was that the one in the Nike thing?
I don't know.
Let me see. Because I know she was a freshman. That's your girl, Overly T.
Why you look that up? Also, Shania McCarthy was recently named SWAT Player of the Week for FAMU's women basketball. So shout out to Deuce.
All right, Deuce.
So moving back to softball, right now in the SWAC East, FAMU is sitting near the top with a 5-4 overall record and riding a 4-game win streak. Conference play hasn't officially started yet, so everyone in the division is 0-0 in SWAC standings, but early momentum matters. They're positioning themselves well before divisional games actually begin. So with this much preseason talent on the roster, is FAMU built to win early, or are they built to sustain a run once SWAC conference play really heats up?
I say sustain. Keep doing what y'all are doing, because clearly what y'all are doing have gotten y'all this far. So I really just say keep sustaining. You know, I feel like there's always room to grow, but in this, at right now, just keep up with what y'all are doing. I feel like it'll build itself.
Yeah, I agree. This is my first season attending a softball game and just staying up with our team in general, but that game against Marshall, I definitely say we got some dogs out there. It was very tight, and to have it stuck 2-2 until the top of the ninth inning was amazing to see, because both teams were locked in defensively. I haven't really been able to see much of them on offense just because that game was really an all-defensive game, but I will be following up, watching more home games. But I like what I see so far. It looks like we're really locked in this year.
Did you find who's for our track? The Nike thing?
I seen the girl, but they haven't added her, but I'm pretty sure it's her.
Okay. Well, last weekend was all about love, but in tennis, love means zero. So let's head to the court and see what the Lady Rattlers are building up this season. Last season, the Lady Rattlers finished 7-2 in the SWAC, play and were in right in the mix near the top of the standings. This year, they haven't faced a conference opponent yet, but non-conference matchups have been about testing depth and chemistry, especially in doubles. In their first home game match, that was weird. In their first home match against Troy, FAMU dropped the double points early and had to play from behind. How much does losing that opening momentum shape the tone of the match, especially at home?
Well, I'll say this. I don't know anything about tennis, but I'm willing to learn. And just being a former athlete, I know that when you start behind and you have to fight back to try to control the game, it's tiring. And just watching tennis, it takes a lot of stamina.
Yeah, body too.
Yeah, it takes a lot of stamina, strength. You're out there in the elements. Fortunately, you know, basketball is inside, so,
Amen.
You know, cool AC, all that. But when you're in, no, literally, but
I
when you're in soccer. The elements.
Oh, I was outside in the cold.
Grass,
so you can relate, like, just the, having the elements on top of being frustrated and on top of having to fight back.
I was cold. I was freezing.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, it's mental. It's a mental toughness game for sure. I think that doubles are essential in order to kick off the game in a positive setting. Especially, for example, like if me and you, Kyle, are on a team and we're playing doubles, and I have a singles match later on that afternoon. The faster we win this game, is probably going to be the better for my body.
Right, but I feel like definitely for that, because playing soccer, I mean, we seen it all the time of we used to put up points like this.
Yeah.
And by the second half, we like, oh, I don't think I can do this anymore. And it was a tough one. So a lot of times, like, and I love my high school team to death, but I feel like a lot of times because we had to play catch up, it was constantly tiring to where we lost. We used to lose.
Yeah.
And it was because playing catch up ain't easy. Your body is still trying to recover from the first half or, you know, the first time you was playing to now, and you're now pushing your body harder. You can't do that. And expect that you're going to. Exactly. Yeah. You can't expect for
like,
you.
I'm tired. I'm not even up.
What?
Now I got to play catch up.
And it's a mental thing, too. It becomes more mental, less physical, and then eventually becomes both equally mental and physical. So hopefully things get better.
Yeah, not quite. When you were reading this, the first thing I thought, I remember middle school, we had a game and we lost our first game. And I'm like, dang. The first thing I was like, well, we can't have an undefeated season. So it's tough, but, you know. Okay. Now let's shift back to the NCAA women's basketball. One of the last week's biggest matchups. On February 12th, Vanderbilt defeats Texas 86-70 in Nashville, controlled the tempo throughout, and Texas struggled to find the consistent scoring against one of the top teams in the country. Vanderbilt now sits at 5 overall. Texas holds the 4th seed. Then on Valentine's Day, South Carolina faced LSU. A matchup had many circles as potential ACC-SEC shutdown, with both teams expected to leave everything on the floor. Let's start with Nashville and Texas. Nashville with Texas and Vanderbilt. A matchup. Okay, let's shift back to the NCAA women's basketball as one of last week's biggest matchups. On February 12th, Vanderbilt defeats Texas 86-70 in Nashville. Vanderbilt controlled the tempo throughout, and Texas struggled to find the consistent scoring against one of the top teams in the country, as Vanderbilt sits at number 5 and where Texas holds the 4th seed. Then on Valentine's Day, South Carolina faced LSU. A matchup had many circles as a potential ACC-SEC shutdown, with both teams expecting to leave everything on the floor. Let's start with Nashville, with Texas and Vanderbilt. A matchup that raised some real questions about composure and consistency heading into March. Was Vanderbilt simply the better team that night, or did Texas expose some weaknesses, whether defensively or in a late game composure that could resurface in March?
Okay, so the Vanderbilt and Texas matchup. I knew Vanderbilt was here this year, but I didn't know they were here.
Oh, I knew they was here when they beat LSU. It was
But LSU, we already talked about them. They're one-dimensional now.
No, facts. But just seeing how they beat them, it was just like, yeah. They're hungry. I feel like a lot of people doubted them coming in, especially being in the SEC, and you're really overlooked because you have teams like now Texas, they just got in. You got LSU, and even though LSU is one-dimensional, they're still like a top team to look at. Like, that's why South Carolina versus LSU was such a big game, because even though, you know, LSU hasn't beat South Carolina in 12 years, they're still up there. So I'm excited. I love the sophomore. I can't remember her name, but I just love how she plays. And
you talking about their point guard? Mm-hmm. Blake's. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, she's raw.
She's just hungry.
Yeah.
And they're just, and you know, I seen an interview and they're just very calm.
Yeah.
They know their roles. And yeah.
What was interesting for me was to see Vanderbilt lead all the way up into the fourth quarter. And I felt like that exposed Texas. So I thought Texas was ready for the tournament. And I feel like essentially they will, you know, look at this game and they'll review the film and make adjustments. But what I noticed from this was they let one girl, and not even, I'm not even going to say one girl, because even though Blake's had 34, she still had three other teammates who scored high in double digits. One girl had 18, another one had 11. So everybody played a role, but Texas struggled with consistency in other players. She played 18 minutes, but she only had 5 points, and that's supposed to be their point guard. So I'm just trying to figure out where did Rory go in that game? She wasn't on the court. She wasn't locked in. It showed that Texas, for one, had a slow defensive start, and they were inconsistent in second player scoring. Madison Booker had 20, but nobody else showed up to play. And I felt like that's scary, especially going into the tournament. You're going to be facing teams like UConn, who plays soundly in all five positions. Everybody can score.
Yeah.
And then you have teams like South Carolina, which is a powerhouse of its own. They have multiple players that can score. I feel like when you go into tournaments, teams like Vanderbilt and the others are going to be the teams that you can see going to the Final Four matchup, because they have a solid five. And with Texas, I just don't see a solid five right now.
Yeah, because I'm looking at their schedule. Even though they did beat South Carolina, they lost to LSU.
Yeah.
So it's kind of just like, do they really show up as a team, or do they show up depending on who they play?
Yeah. I feel like Texas and LSU show similar characteristics when it comes down to having one player carry the load of the team. We can even look at that when it comes down to FAMU basketball.
Yeah. Yeah, the center. Like, they're kind of feeding off her, and they do have some vets that are
Williams.
Kind of, they're getting the recognition, but they're definitely feeding, like, it definitely around her, and they're getting more recruits.
Yeah.
So that definitely moved into my second question. Does this result shift your expectations for either teams heading into the NCAA tournament, or which one do you trust more in a high pressure postseason environment when it comes to? Well, you already kind of answered that.
Yeah.
With Texas and LSU, but I feel like Vanderbilt, they kind of like built off that pressure. Like I said, they were the underdogs, especially being, I think they're one of the original SEC teams. So now that they're like on the come up, I feel like they're getting the recognition that they deserve. But when it comes to the high pressure postseason environment and just moving to the tournament, even South Carolina, I feel like sometimes South Carolina doesn't show up to the second half, and I love South Carolina, but they don't always come off swinging off the bat every game.
Right now in my Final Four, I got UConn, UCLA. I'm sorry, what? I got UConn, UCLA. I have South Carolina, and I got Vanderbilt.
I got to see when they release, you know, everybody on each side.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I say I like UCLA is because y'all can keep saying what y'all want, but the centers
facts.
Hold the game down. If you can control the boards, which leads into that South Carolina and LSU matchup game. South Carolina controlled the boards the entire game. They had two players who combined for 30 rebounds.
Oh,
that lets me know that you got second chance points. You controlled rebounds defensively, and you stopped LSU from scoring. That's all that's showing me right there.
So I feel like you already answered my next question as well. No, you're good. Did the game unfold the way we expected, or did whether it was the rebounding, turnovers, or shot selections when it came to like the outcome of LSU and South Carolina? And you kind of touched on that when it came to the boards. And I feel like South Carolina, just going back to 2020, like Matt Kiki and all of them, and even Aaliyah Boston, her class, they really gave the recognition that post players really deserve, because they really do control the pace of the game.
Yeah.
And I feel like watching them, like in early college days, before like they went to the WNBA, it made me respect post players more, because I really understood like they really do control the game. And I feel like we've seen a great representation over the years with South Carolina, even Texas, with their bigs and being able to like control what happens with the game or how it goes, or just getting out those second chance points like you mentioned.
I think South Carolina is doing a great job with just executing everybody in their specific roles. I feel like when we are talking about a top five team, or if we're talking about just having a good team, that's when coaching comes into play, making sure that you're getting the correct players to fulfill each and every role. And then that way it doesn't put a lot of pressure on your bench players, because it allows them time and years to develop and practice, to develop individually with their skill coaches and just build muscle, whatever they need to do. Red shirts, they don't have to stress out as much because they have a starting five and hopefully a six man who will produce the numbers on the court. So then when it is their time to shine, they're just sliding into that role because they've been practicing under their mentor.
And I like the way you said that, because one thing I noticed about South Carolina, even Vanderbilt, when you talk about like their come up and stuff like that, I feel like, you know, one thing my coach always told me, like, you know, when you're playing against your teammates, that should be like the hardest you're going, because when you go out to these games, yeah, they can watch film, but they don't understand how you play. And I feel like South Carolina, like I already said before, they play to their best of ability. So does Vanderbilt. They don't let anybody dictate, okay, how am I going to go? They don't play scary. And I feel like we're seeing that a lot with Vanderbilt. They don't care like whose name's attached to it. They're going to play their game at the end of the day. And I feel like that's why, like, you know, even LSU, like, they're losing games, like, y'all forget who y'all are, not only just like the franchise, but the players itself. Like, you know, when we watched the game with Flage, even them losing to Ole Miss, it was just like, you're not showing up as the player that we know you can be.
Yeah, I feel that. So with that being said, who do y'all have as your final four for the tournament?
I like Vanderbilt, I like UConn, I like South Carolina. I haven't really been, I'm trying to see, I don't think LSU. They just, since when they lost, not gonna lie, when they lost on New Year's Day against Duke, or was it Duke or Kentucky? I think it was Kentucky. Yeah, it was Kentucky. They just been off. But they, everybody said they had an easy schedule, so, which they always do. And like you said, it comes down to coaching. Mm-hmm. I don't think Coach Mokey have been coaching them like they should be coached. So when it comes to the Final Four, I don't know.
I would love to see TCU in it, but I just don't. I don't think they're going to make it. They had a soft schedule.
I like
Notre
Dame. I haven't been watching them, but I love their coach.
Yeah.
I like, I don't want to butcher her last name, something.
Oh, Hannah Helgado.
Yeah, Helgado. Yeah. Yeah. Love her.
Yeah, I wish she's a bucket.
Didn't leave, but that's a topic for another day.
She's snapping at TCU, though.
Of course.
Yes, she's snapping. I love that for her. I love that for her. Kaya, who's in your top four?
I'm not going to lie. I'm definitely going to say Vanderbilt. For sure. South Carolina. I wish Florida was in there, you know, being a Florida native. I really wish, but it's just
and
not.
By Florida, she means Florida State, you guys.
Whoa.
That's what she meant. That's what she meant. She meant Florida State.
You know, Dad, I hope you're not watching. But, you know, I just want some part of Florida. Anytime I get to see Florida, I'm like, please, 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 please.
Yeah.
But definitely going Vanderbilt, South Carolina, TCU. Ole Miss.
Yeah, I'm looking at the top 25. Okay. I don't really see none of these other teams that are under the top five really making it.
Yeah.
For real.
I'm going with UConn, like I said before, UCLA, yeah. South Carolina, and Vanderbilt.
South Carolina versus UConn, because that championship game last year, it just gave me deja vu from when Iowa played LSU. Like, that day, it was just LSU's day. Like, no one could take that game away from it. And I feel like even UConn, like, it was just, it wasn't that South Carolina, it was their day. Like, UConn blew them out the water. They were just, shots were hitting. It was just, I wouldn't even say everything was, it was just good basketball. Like, it was a good loss. And even, like, the way Don Staley spoke about the game, it was just a game. So I would love to see that matchup again.
I feel that. So, well, speaking of March, it is around the corner, and it is officially prediction season. So, ladies, let's go ahead and get into our NCAA Women's Basketball Weekend picks. Now, before we break them all down, I just want to know, out of this lineup, which game are you most excited to watch this weekend?
Just scanning through, definitely Ole Miss in South Carolina. I love Ole Miss's coach. I think her name is Coach Yo-Yo.
Mm-hmm.
She just did a defensive team. And I made a mistake earlier. Ole Miss definitely beat LSU, and they're number 17. So I can't wait for that game. Dang, USC has not been nothing this season.
No, they haven't. But you knew that.
I know. I knew, but I see that thing. I'm like, dang, no number next to them or nothing.
No. Not until Juju get back. Not until she get back.
I'm not going to lie. I'm probably looking forward to Duke versus Clemson game.
That sounds like a good one. That'll be a good one.
Yeah.
I like that.
What about you?
Iowa State and TCU. I just, I love Audie Crooks. I love Audie Crooks.
You know what? We're going to put up a board of all of the love that Mia has. Start with
Paige. Love basketball. But no, I'm a big fan of Audie Crooks just with her post dominance and just like knowing where the basket is. Like if you just look at her footwork, she's a beast down low. Like it doesn't have anything to do with just her being bigger than the other players,
and
but she actually has she definitely has like post presence. It just gives me like old school post move vibes. Like I just love Audie Crooks. And then like we already talked about Olivia Miles with TCU. They look really nice this year, so I think that'll be a really good matchup. We don't have time to go through all of the games this weekend, but I do want to know, what is your pick with the Ole Miss and South Carolina game? Who be choosing?
South Carolina. It's just going to be a good game.
But
they're definitely going to, you know,
I feel this.
And I like, okay, before we get off, I like how you said she knows where the board is. One thing I was watching when I went to the game last week, they don't even look at the board when they're like when they get the ball, like it's just like they're looking to pass.
Yeah.
I seen that with the women's and men's basketball game. So like that's something they need to work on too. Cause just not looking at the basket to see if you can score, you're just passing it. Like that's where their shots be off. It's repetition. Like you said, she knows where she's at because she's been in those predicaments. Okay, I'm gonna look, I'm gonna pass, I'm gonna go up, I'm gonna get the and-one.
Facts. What about Michigan and Iowa? That's the 6th seed versus the 13th. So how we feeling?
Michigan. They got that one girl. I forgot her name.
Yeah, I think Michigan's playing really good.
Her mom was posting, talking about her daughter. She's been doing
really good. As of right now, just looking at the seeds, just, you know, where they're at, I mean, clearly they've earned it.
I don't see no upsets this week.
You don't feel like Iowa can upset Michigan? No.
Nah.
I just thought I'd ask. What y'all got about the Missouri and LSU game?
I want to have LSU.
I don't have LSU.
But I don't.
I don't have LSU.
Like, oh, it's conference play. They might come. I remember when they beat South Carolina by that one point like 3 years ago, that redheaded girl. So I love a good upset, though.
LSU is just frustrating me. Again, where is the team identity? And then Kim Mulkey, if we could just dwell on this for a moment. Why didn't she start homegirl?
Who?
For that game.
Lay?
Yes.
But did you see the videos when they were like looking at her and she just smiled at her and everybody was like, she's talking about something. Why did I bring you here during the South Carolina game? There was so many memes. I'm gonna send it.
That's crazy. Like, I really want to know the backstory as to why she didn't start. Like, I don't know. Well, we do know Lay has like a bit of a authority issue, so I don't know if it was like a practice thing or what, but we definitely need to look into that because I just thought that she would start. Even if she wasn't planning to start, just having South Carolina get off the bus with them blue jackets, I would be like, you know what? You're starting.
I'm not going to lie.
Boo. Like, boo.
Oh,
yeah.
I thought you said blue. I'm like,
no,
blue.
Boo. Like, boo.
I'm not going to lie, though, is seeing it from being a football manager to even playing on a team, attitude is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
So it's like, if your attitude is not there, I can't trust that you're going to go and handle up when I need you to, because you're so worried about not being wanting to be told what to do.
Agreed.
Or, you know, so I feel like most coaches make the right call.
Mm-hmm.
It may hurt the team, but sometimes you know, just how we were saying, you got to make it known to everybody.
And I think Kim Mulkey realized that in the game. Like I said, I'm going to send y'all the clip. When she looked at her, it was kind of just like, you know, when we seen Fulali play at South Carolina, everybody thought, okay, maybe she doesn't want to listen to Dawn. Like, no, it's a internal issue. It's not nobody else. And I feel like Kim Mulkey definitely recognized that in that game, or just even previous before. Like, you know, maybe she thought she could change her, or maybe she thought it wasn't her, but it's like she's realizing, like, okay. Because she's always been, like, kind of like, you know, a little crybaby, just not listening to authority. And she's not really a team player either, to me, anyways, too. So she's very, like, saucy, but you have to make those points. You can't just, like, do everything fancy and just...
Yeah.
Go 50 for 50. So I feel like Kim Mulkey is slowly realizing that. So I don't think, you know, since we've all played sports, we kind of see that aspect. But I feel like the fans probably didn't see that too. And then, like, you know, playing your other team can be somewhat difficult. You don't know what emotions and what's going through, especially a big game like this. Because like I said, even though they haven't won in 12 years, this game is sold out every year. And it was on Valentine's Day during Mardi Gras.
So since you're talking about this being an attitude problem and her changing from South Carolina to LSU has not fixed that attitude problem yet, do you see her staying at LSU, or would you like to see her go to another program that might be a little bit more disciplined, like in between a Mulkey and
an easy program? Don Staley's the type of coach, she has expectations.
Yeah.
And that's how my dad is. Like, what's understood doesn't have to be said. And, like, of course, like, she's going to coach you, but Don Staley, you can see that with her team. That's why she doesn't have to say too much when it comes to running plays and calling this. Like, Kim Mulkey is very, I feel like sometimes they don't listen to her.
Yeah.
So I don't know what kind of program she's going to go to next, because it don't get any better than, like, this. And, you know, some people like to get micromanaged, and I feel like Don Staley wasn't going to do that, but Kim Mulkey does. And it's like, if you're not going to listen to those both, what do you need?
Nobody's going
to
hold your hand. Yeah.
Exactly.
Game,
and I feel like Kim kind of tried to help her, because like I said, with Don, it's like, it's a team. That's another, they're very team-oriented. Well, with Kim Mulkey, she's like, okay, she's telling you this. But now, like, okay, if you do transfer, what's next? Because you had somebody that was just like, you had all these vets trying to, like, pour into you, and then you move to a program where she's trying to hold your hand. It's like, it can't get more stricter than this. So I don't see where she would go. I feel like she should have stayed at South Carolina, and she should have learned.
She definitely hurt her transfer portal capital as far as like where she could go, because she looked good around a great team.
Exactly.
Now she's exposed because she's around a team that needs her, and she's not producing.
And we've seen it, you know, like her flaws even in South Carolina, because South Carolina at the end of the day is a role playing team. If you don't show up, people are gonna see it.
She can come to Florida State. I'll watch.
She might get frustrated because
she can come to Florida State.
So yeah,
she can come to Florida State. But where I would like to see her, though, and I'm not just like choosing. Well, I mean, when you're, but this is my thing. I don't want to see her go to a team that is not a contender. You know what I'm saying? So a team that I feel like could use her.
TCU. She gonna say TCU?
No.
Oh.
USC. If Juju comes back next year,
what would be her role?
Her role would just be to score. That's it. And that's all she need. Just be a shooting guard.
We can talk about USC later, because even their team is kind of just like,
They remind me of
Iowa.
They're up in the air right now. So I feel like if they were to get players to wrap around Juju, because obviously she's not going to come back and look like she looked.
But
right
will
away.
She understand her role? That's the thing. Because it's one thing to be a role player, but even at South Carolina, she didn't understand her role.
You didn't
understand that it was a greater purpose for what you were doing.
I feel like with players like that, they shouldn't look at the team, but they should look at the coach. Which coach can I gel around well? Because she's not doing well with super strict coaches like Don Staley. And then with Kim Mulkey, she's kind of, I'm not going to say a lackadaisical coach, but she allows her players to play however they want to play, whatever is comfortable for them. I feel like she needs a well-balanced in-between. A coach who is going to push her, but not also hold all of these expectations on her head. Someone who can
hold her accountable,
but go about it in a nicer way.
I feel like Don's... I don't know.
Don was the one, but, like, she can't go back. So, we got to find somebody else.
I remember when that dropped, I was like, ain't no way. And the transfer to LSU, like, you're janky.
Yeah, she was tripping to leave. But, hey, everybody just can't work under certain coaches. Like,
Like, I remember even when, like, Sanaya Rivers left, like, it was because she moved to NC State.
Yeah.
That was the year they went, their women's and men's had went to the Final Four. I feel like that was like a good move for her. And I remember she spoke about it. She's like, it wasn't the coach, it just wasn't the best for me.
Yeah.
And even seeing like how she had like that dominance at NC State and the way she had her team. You know, and that's another thing. Some people aren't meant to like have that role playing thing. Some people are leaders. And I feel like one thing I can respect about South Carolina, everybody knows their roles and they understand like it's for the greater good. And I feel like that's why I love that team, because they just show the true definition of like what women's basketball is. Like somebody can show up and have 20, somebody can show up and have 10, and it still all contributes. And they all, like, will get on the boards. They all hustle and everything.
All right, so last game pick, Iowa State and TCU.
Just because you like TCU so much, I might tune into that game. TCU.
I just feel like they box office. Like, that when you turn on that game, whether you're a man or a woman, you're going to be stuck just watching them play. Cause they play box office.
Is that one girl still there? That tall little 6'7" white girl?
Yeah, the one that shoots.
No, the one that like. Her name's like, she used to play for Oregon. Then she moved. Like her.
I don't know her name, but but we just gonna go with maybe.
Okay.
But I'm gonna go with TCU.
You going with TCU?
Yeah, just because you've been raving this whole
I'm
day.
Going with Iowa State. If they let Audie Crooks drop 50 points, which she probably could.
Against
TCU, they gonna
win. I thought
you
like TCU.
I like them both.
Girl, I'm not. I like them both. She likes everybody.
No. I like certain players. I just like their games. But being, like I said, a former power forward center, I'm going with Audie Crooks and Iowa State because I don't see a center on TCU's team who is going to lock her up. If Audie Crooks drops 40, no, you can't change. If Audie Crooks drops 40, they win. But then at the same time, do they have a guard that can guard Olivia Miles? See, that's why it's going to be a good matchup.
Yeah, because, I mean...
They both going for 40.
Olivia Miles is the tall guard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They both going for 40, so it's going to be a good matchup either way. I'm going with Iowa State, though.
It just, honestly, center like stay together. It all shows how their role players show up at this point. Because you know they each probably going to get 40, like you said, but like who's going to be on the boards, who's going to be making sure they get those points. Because, you know, even if you can't stop her, you got to do something, or you got to be pulling weight where somewhere else isn't hitting. So it's definitely going to be interesting.
For sure, for sure. So you heard it here first. There's a lot of statement games across women's college basketball this weekend. Now the floor will be doing the talking. Y'all make sure y'all hold us accountable because next episode we're going to talk about whose picks were right. Hey, so, you know, that's all the time we have for today. Thank y'all so much for tuning in to Leveling the Field. Before we get out of here, I want to give the starting lineup a chance to sign off. Go ahead, ladies. Give a quick shout out.
Well, y'all, thank y'all for having me again. I hope that our Lady Rattlers do make some great progress tonight. But this is your favorite female sports journalist, Alani J, signing out.
March is upon us. Not only my birthday, but March Madness. So I'm just excited for good basketball, honestly. I just want good basketball. So this is Rena Simone signing off, y'all.
All right. And that's the starting lineup. Thank y'all so much for rocking out with us here on WANM 90.5. I'm your host, Amia Kay, and we will catch y'all next week.
Ciao, ciao.
Woo-hoo! Leveling the Field is produced in the studio of WANM FM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communications at Florida A&M University.